text in from Anonymous. On your night program, they write, the quiz is so repetitive and just not good to listen to. It's obvious that some are using their computer. And why repeat everything again and again and again? I will be changing programs, having listened to Radio NZ for years. Cheerio then. Hello, Hayden Donnell.
Kia ora. Well, that's funny. That was the thing that broke that person. They've listened through thick and thin, and then just the quiz angered them and they're out.
The straw that broke the camel's back.
It doesn't seem like it was even the straw. That was the entire weight of it. The quiz was everything.
It was the quiz.
The
quiz has got a lot to answer for.
My God.
Who do you get told that you look like?
Sometimes I get the actor Justin Long, who's he's just a very average looking white male. I always say that I look like the starting template in
a
RPG.
Video game, in Dark Souls.
Yeah, if you just like get the template kind of white male character, then it's just me.
I'm doing an Elden Ring run through with you right now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because you can't be bothered. If you can't be bothered customizing your character, I'm pretty much what they churn out.
Hayden Donnell. That's great. All right, we can begin in only one place this evening with Midweek Media Watch. Melissa Lee has been sacked. Are we using the verb sacked as Broadcasting Minister?
I've seen sacked about. Yeah. She's definitely been moved out of cabinet and demoted, so I guess that's a sacking.
Yeah.
It's a demotion. I don't know how particular we should be. I think that what we need to say, though, in the absence of Joe Moyer, she's really she's deserted her post here, but someone needs to say it, right? Do you want to say it?
No, you say it.
Melissa Lee gone burger.
Melissa Lee gone burger.
So, I mean, this has been on the cards for some time, hasn't it? And especially since this Freudian slip from Prime Minister Chris Luxon.
No, not at this point. No, not at all. And what I'd say to you is, you know, what she's working hard at, what the government will continue to work hard at, is what can we do?
Not at this point.
Not at this point.
He said a week or two ago. Now, that was sort of, he said, oh, it was a slip of the tongue. I didn't mean it like that. Colin was on the line to me, Emil. He's like, should I even put it in? Was it just a slip of the tongue? I said, look, you need to put it in. There's every chance that it's saying something. You know, I was responsible for getting it in the show, and look how that paid off. Look how silly Colin would have looked if he hadn't taken my advice.
Nostradamus Donnell.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And so Lee has been replaced as Broadcasting Minister by Paul Goldsmith.
Yes, and he will have quite a bit on his plate.
Do you mean? He's only Minister of Justice, State-Owned Enterprises, Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations, and Arts, Culture and Heritage. So I'm sure he'll be able to fit saving the media into his lunch break or something.
So Melissa Lee's tenure is broadcasting and media. Is it broadcasting and media? Oh, who cares? Is the Broadcasting Minister or what
Broadcasting
it's called
these days?
It is Broadcasting Minister? I thought it had a different name. Minister responsible for the media? Look, these are the details. It lasted not even 6 months.
No, it's not Broadcasting Minister. Sorry.
Not even 6 months. And I mean, how would you assess her time in this ministerial role, Hayden?
It's hard to say that it went well, isn't it?
Yes.
Emil. I mean, it doesn't look good when the minister responsible for the media doesn't seem comfortable at all fronting the media and isn't able to articulate herself well to the media. And she was kind of a deer in the headlights with the crisis that befell her. It didn't seem like she'd thought too deeply about exactly how to save the media or whether it needed saving at all. And she turned down nearly every media interview, including Media Watch, which she said would be boring. And I actually took that. I took that to the Media Council. I said that I complained under the standard of accuracy there, but they rejected that, saying that her statement was provably true. So,
hey, well done. Hey. Very good.
She did front, though, it was often not. It was marked by kind of bizarre exchanges, like this one on whether a rescue plan for the media had gone to cabinet.
There is a cabinet paper, and I won't talk about the process.
Yes, but can you understand the problem here is that if you're talking about something that's gone to cabinet, but it hasn't gone to cabinet, then actually it hasn't gone to cabinet.
I won't talk about the process.
Okay, so you're comfortable for us to report that you haven't taken anything to cabinet other than some conversation about trains and a bit of discussion about a bill that's going through Parliament?
As I said, I won't talk about the process, and you can report as you wish. You have the freedom to do that.
be wrong.
But you might be wrong, she said after that. Yep. Now, I wish that radio was a visual medium. Always do, but I could show you then the faces that Jenna Lynch from News Hub was making during that exchange. They went viral.
Expressive.
Yep. They were very expressive.
Yeah. So what was the reaction to Melissa Lee's dismissal from the media?
No, you wouldn't say it was mournful. So I saw News Hub at 6. They vox popped people outside her Mount Albert office, and they were just saying, oh, yeah, she needed to go. Didn't seem good. Heather Du Plessis Allen, she had Chris Luxon on her show to talk about Melissa Lee, but she said in a promo for it, she wouldn't even ask him why she was sacked because it was so obvious. Mm. The Herald was the weirdest, though. They posted on their Twitter account. I can show it to you, Emil. I've got it printed out if you haven't seen it.
Okay.
It's Melissa Lee's face in the middle of the Looney Tunes end credit.
Oh, wow.
Frame in the place of Porky Pig with the That's All Folks frame. And then if people didn't get the joke, they actually posted the real image.
The original
Porky
image.
Pig with That's All Folks above him. And then they deleted both of those.
Yeah, I was going to say, this better. Seems somewhat tasteless in the moment.
Pretty tasteless. I almost think the level of gloating, it's almost a little bit inappropriate, maybe. Very, very much kicking someone while they're down, that's for sure.
Well, because I guess...
And there was, I mean, Melissa Lee did care about the media. From what we can, she didn't always articulate that very well.
And lurking in the background of this is the idea that the problems that the media faces are not because Melissa Lee is the broadcasting minister.
No, they're structural problems that have been lingering for a long time that Labour, I mean, they did put a few efforts in, but they didn't fix it either. And the problem for her, though, I think... From Chris Luxon's perspective, it's that it just kind of looked bad when she couldn't articulate herself very well. It didn't. She looked like a deer in the headlights, as people have said. From the media's perspective, it's that she didn't seem to have a really substantive plan to address those structural issues at a time that they were all coming to a head and resulting in some of the biggest job losses and shutdowns in New Zealand media history, and they don't look like that's going to be the end of them either. So, yeah, that was the... issue. There's two issues there. From I don't know whether the media's complaints were what motivated Chris Luxon's decision today, but it seems that maybe they made the media doesn't seem very upset necessarily.
Now, Melissa Lee was constantly talking about the mythical plan. We didn't get to see the plan before this all happened. So, I mean, what? where are we at?
I mean, the thing that's on the table at the moment is the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, and that's just one that would force sort of Facebook and Google to the table and make them create a pay deal with our news companies. Now, those have been fraught with issues overseas. Facebook's pulled out of actually paying in Australia. They've sort of held out in Canada as well. The tech companies are not very cooperative on those. They do have their issues. There's one that's sort of proposed by public media campaigners. It's a levy on online advertising to fund the media. Now, that seems like a far more elegant solution and possibly one that could... I think they justify it, saying that it would actually make up for the wider harms that some of these social companies do, not just in terms of the destruction of the media, but in terms of misinformation, disinformation, the effects on stuff like teenagers' mental health and that sort of stuff that's been proven, bullying, all that sort of stuff. So that's a relatively elegant solution. Maybe they could get behind it on those grounds. You know, people say make TVNZ public. It seems weird that TVNZ is cutting some of its most... Their best public goods, basically, in the form of Sunday and Fair Go, as soon as there's a money crunch on. That seems odd for a public entity. The state-owned enterprise model might not be working well there. And then there's just stuff like maybe a short-term sell, relief on courtier fees that broadcasters pay to be on the air. So maybe they'll be able to stay on TV for longer if they're not paying millions to the government to just get their license fees.
So Melissa Lee's replacement in this portfolio is Paul Goldsmith. I've just got a text in from somebody saying, so her replacement is a Taekwondo expert, ? What do we know about Paul Goldsmith, and what, if anything, about his views on such matters?
There's not a lot that I can find, but to be fair, I didn't do a very detailed search. I didn't, for instance, know that he's a Taekwondo expert.
Yeah, I think he is.
Is that a transferable skill? Is that something that does help when you are actually administering?
Well, I mean, among other characteristics and elements of his career, I think he was an economist as well, wasn't he?
Jousting, and, you know, there's sort of that kind of thing. Yeah. There is an element of combat.
And of course, not all ministers have prior experience in the exact realm of their portfolios.
No, absolutely not. I don't think Nicola Willis as an economist or anything, for instance.
No, and I think the same was true of Grant Robertson when he was Minister of Finance as well.
Yeah. The thing that Chris Luxon said is that he is the Minister of Culture and Heritage, so there are what Luxon thought of as synergies there. You know, as always, powering up, exciting times ahead. Mm-hmm. Not sure exactly what he will do, but he does seem like perhaps just a safer pair of hands for the government.
We did get a nice line from Christopher Luxon tonight too, didn't we? And this is how I roll.
Oh, yeah, this is how I roll. Oh, he said something else as well besides that. This is my style or something. Yeah. This is how I roll. Yeah. Get used to it. It very much did sound like something that David Brent would say, didn't it?
Oh, David. All right, let's move on to another subject. And you wanted to talk about Q&A's interview over the weekend with the Israeli ambassador, Ran Jacoby. There have been some complaints about her. There was some consternation around this interview.
Yes, there has been some consternation, primarily about one particular moment, some footage that played as the ambassador said this.
What was going on the October 7th, they probably have followed the news and dwelt a bit into the pictures. Maybe we should begin on the few hours before.
Now that's Ran Jacoby talking about the events of October 7, obviously, but the problem was that that was overlaid with footage from the aftermath of some Israeli strikes on Gaza. So that created the impression that what you were seeing on the screen was stuff that happened on October 7, when it wasn't stuff that happened on October 7, it was stuff that Israel had done in Gaza. And so that was obviously, yeah, it created an inaccurate impression.
How would something like that happen in a broadcast like this?
I'm not sure. I don't have any inside information, but you know, you've probably experienced this a bit. This wasn't a live interview, so it's potential that when they're making edits and that kind of thing, they do overlay footage to kind of disguise what's going on. I don't think, from what Q&A has said afterwards, that it was intention to deceive or anything like that, and they've pretty much admitted as much.
Yeah, Q&A released a statement basically copying to the mistake here.
Yeah, they said it was our intention to show general scenes of the conflict's destruction, but the timing of this overlay footage was an error. We apologise for this error and have amended online versions of the interview.
Okay. So there's the error. It's copped to by Q&A. There we go. So let's take in the interview as a whole. What did you make of it?
Yeah, controversial interview, just of course, because it's a hot button issue for good reason. I'll start with the positive. I thought that there were some really pertinent questions asked and some responses that many people would find pretty confronting, to be honest. And just as an example, this is Jack Tame examining the idea that Israel is justified in killing what's thought to be now 13,000 Palestinian children because Hamas is using those children as human shields.
But just as a moral exercise here, if a gunman were to take someone important to you, a child that was important to you, and hold the gun to their head, the authorities responded by shooting dead both the gunman and the child. And when you ask them, they said, well, it was a human shield. Would you accept that response?
If this is what the best tactical option would be of the commander on the ground, unfortunately, yes.
Ooh, wow.
To me, that's a pretty striking statement. As a parent, it sends a shiver up my spine, to be honest. And there's a strain of criticism with this interview that I don't agree with, I've seen people say it, and that's it. Jacoby shouldn't have been platformed. He has these views that I disagree with, and therefore he shouldn't have been platformed. And I think that idea of platforming, that applies when people's currency is their social following or their audience is their power source. It doesn't really apply when this person is a representative of government, which is its own power source. And so the media role of getting them on and questioning them is holding that power to account, actually getting a public accountability role there.
Perfectly legitimate to interview the Israeli.
I think it is valuable to get that sort of statement on the record from a person in a position of power. I thought there were other concerns that I've seen raised that at least had a bit more substance to them.
Such as?
I saw Palestinian Youth Aotearoa, they put out a press release listing some of the claims that were made in the interview. And so, for instance, both Tame and Yaqobi gave the death toll from October 7 as 1,400. Look, the best estimates we have at the moment are something like 20% lower, 1,139. And you had, as well, you had assertions about atrocities that happened allegedly on October 7, decapitations and widespread rape was one of them. Now, those have been, they went through unchallenged in this interview. They have been challenged elsewhere, including at some of the outlets that publish stories about them, like the New York Times. It has had internal dissent in its newsroom about its story on gang rape on October 7, for instance. And look,
So you're suggesting there's contested
claims? There's contested
claims
that probably weren't contested in the moment there. And I can see how people that come from a pro-Palestinian perspective would be upset that those were not contested or challenged in the moment. And I'll just add that there's a language thing that is probably an overarching issue with some of our coverage of Palestine and Gaza in general. And that's just the language that we use. Like words like butchery was used about October 7. And you can say, absolutely, fair enough. Fine, but it's pointed out that these sort of terms and emotive terms are very rarely used in the other direction or applied to Israeli actions. And so that can be a source of consternation as well.
So, yeah, the idea that a word like butchery comes with a sort of implied moral judgment.
Yeah, and it's a dehumanizing word as well, isn't it? If you're a butcher, then also it's...
Right. I see, yeah. And that's a relatively common complaint throughout coverage throughout this conflict, right?
This is definitely not localized to Q&A. Yeah. It's just an example here and something that has been complained about all across the world, and particularly in the US. So the former MSNBC host, Mehdi Hassan, his show's recently been cancelled and he started his own media venture where he talks more frankly about Palestine than he might have otherwise on the US networks. And he's talked about this issue of language recently in reference to wider media coverage. And this is just a clip to give you a taste of that.
The numbers don't lie. A survey of articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the LA Times, reported on by The Intercept back in January, found that the term slaughter was used by editors and reporters to describe the killing of Israelis versus Palestinians 60 to 1.
Mm-hmm. He went on to note a whole bunch of other numbers there. There was a study of the BBC's coverage. It found a 101-to-1 ratio of the word murder used in stories on Israeli victims of Hamas violence rather than the other way around. And then there's also words like father, son, daughter that we use far more often to describe Israeli victims.
Why do you think that? Do you think that stems from maybe an idea that the beginning of this conflict really kicked off on October the 7th, that it was an act of aggression from Hamas that began things, and that has sort of coloured the language of reporting on it, and perhaps fails to take into context some of the historical context in this conflict? I'm speculating there, I suppose.
You know, don't know, and I'm not involved enough in the editorial decision-making to say exactly why it is like that. I think there is a historical link between Western media and Israel is an ally of many of Western powers that like the US, for instance, operate in. And so maybe there's a familiarity there that gets used when it's someone that you see as an ally or a peer or something like that, that doesn't get applied to people that you see as more of an other. And that's, maybe I'm going off piste here. Look, I don't know, but maybe that's why that kind of language is used. There'll be a whole bunch of other reasons. Look, I don't think the point is that Israeli victims don't deserve that sort of treatment, but there's a sense that Palestinians are being treated as less human. The language used about them is less humanizing in the media.
It was interesting seeing the comparison and coverage when an Israeli strike on the World Central Kitchen convoy.
Yes, and you had this real deep, in-depth coverage of the victims there, which was really good. Like, for instance, One News carried this lengthy and detailed article by its Australian correspondent about Zomi Frankum, who was one of the aid workers over there. Family paying tribute to her selflessness and generosity stuff did the same thing. And look, that's great. I think that many pro-Palestinian supporters, they note as well that there are 34,000 dead in Gaza right now, and many of them were also selfless or generous. They were civilians, they were children, they had families, and they haven't necessarily got the same treatment in the Western media, and they haven't been humanised in the same way. And look, you can say there's reasons for that, and like it's actually literally just hard to get into Gaza. Mm. But we also, it's hard to tell those stories, and I have seen those stories told well sometimes. It's not like it's not being done, but it is done less, and the numbers are so much larger, and there isn't that same thing, that same in-depth to it. And you've seen as well, you could say, oh, well, there's not a taste for it from Western audiences. Well, actually, if we've seen anything from Instagram and from various social platforms lately, there is a taste for it. You've seen people reporting from inside Gaza that have developed millions and millions of followers, huge followings. Mm. So there is a taste for it. So it's interesting that it hasn't been necessarily done.
In summary on this, I mean, I watched this interview. I thought it was an interesting and valuable interview in the context of this ongoing conflict. What do you think Q&A might do differently, or how do you think this might affect their approach moving forward in their coverage of this wider story?
You see, Jack Tame, when he's with politicians, he always has the facts at hand, and he's willing to jump in and he will correct them on stuff. Maybe he could have done that more. Having said that, maybe it was a tactic to not do that and let someone speak, because sometimes you can actually get a more fulsome statement out of them. Just letting someone be comfortable and talk openly is the better tactic, even if it doesn't make you look cool as an interviewer. So I can see maybe he would argue that. I think the real thing that, probably there should have been jumping in on some of those points of contention, but also I think the main thing they could do is provide balance at a later date, interview someone from the Palestinian perspective. That would be valuable too.
All right. We have, about a minute and a half left, Hayden. So should we talk briefly about stuff.co.nz and the Stuff Quiz?
My goodness gracious me. The afternoon quiz last Friday, one of the questions went up. It was accompanied by an amazing and disturbing image. I sent it to you, Emil.
You did.
It was very rude. It was a question about avatars, emojis. It was about a dystopian novel where the term avatar came from. But the accompanying image was a series of avatars that were incredibly rude.
Yeah, several pairs of fulsome breasts.
Genitalia. Yeah, it seemed like there were mushrooms in there. That was almost like
some phallic symbols.
Ejaculate.
It was very strange.
It was quite intense sight to see on stuff.co.nz's afternoon quiz, you'd have to say. It was up for 30 minutes, apparently. My first theory was this was AI, generated from the words like dystopia and avatar and online or something. I was wrong. I went to Stuff on this. I said, what the heck? What's going on, guys? And their spokesman came back saying, not AI. This was human error. And they said that this was an image selected, obviously with a not as much care as usual, from their quiz tool. To which I kind of responded, what the heck is going on with your quiz tool, guys? what kind of smut have you got in there? But they haven't responded to that. I'm sorry, this is a very less serious topic to transition to. But I'll post the image online for people to see later. Yeah. You'll see that this is, I mean, it's a laughing matter.
It's quite something.
But it's quite something. It's striking.
Hayden Donnell, thank you.
Thank you.